Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, October 31st, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, we had a little bit of treats in gold, not trick-or-treats, but treats in gold and silver today. Not a lot, but we got a little. Better than that chocolate for you. 360 for gold at 1279.30. You have silver up 14 cents today at $17.97. Platinum was up 1 at 983. Platinum was down 3 at 621. The USDX today was trading just a little stronger, 0.02. 98.36. Crude oil was down big, 1.91, 46.79. I guess all those OPEC countries are in a tiffy over there. Can't decide, do we cut production or shouldn't we cut production? It's really kind of funny, but I guess it's not if you're in the oil business and you know, so forth. But anyway, that's where that's coming from. A lot of uncertainty there. And again, a little pressure on the Dow today, down 0.1, down 18,142. The NASDAQ unchanged, 51.89. S&P basically unchanged, 21.26. 10-year yield, 1.83, holding there, just down 0.01. Euro climbed a little bit, 1.10, but it was still down 0.06. Overnight markets just a little bit on the flat side. So not a lot of action in the markets. I think everybody's holding their breath to see what's going to happen.
Something going to happen?
With Comey and the investigation with Hillary. They're going to replace her. She's going to be So I think markets are also holding the breath, you know, as far as that goes. And certainly Trump's numbers seem to be moving upward. If you believe any of the polls at any time, they might have already been higher than Hillary's to begin with. Which is a good thing. But A lot of discussion on that. But anyway, consumers' purchases climbed in September by the most in 3 months as incomes grew. Maybe this is a little bit of momentum in the biggest part of the U.S. economy. Consumers are spending, considering that they make up 70%. The 0.5% advance in spending Woo-hoo. Followed by a 0.1% decline the prior month, on which also the Commerce Department revised today. Now it's funny because they talk about, you know, this is just great. You know, we have incomes are growing and so forth and whatnot. You know, what they give you in one sentence, they take away in another after they talk about, well, you know, after, you know, the disposable income is adjusted for inflation, there's no money left over, very little money left over. So, you know, in one breath, they tell you, hey, incomes are rising. Another breath, yeah, but that disposable income just isn't there yet. So where they're getting all this money to do their spending. But we know that. It's thank you, MasterCard. Thank you, Visa. Thank you, Discovery. Thank you, American Express. But so they're all optimistic. Russell Price, Ameriprise Financial in Detroit, says as long as we continue to see employment growth and wage growth, yeah, wages, incomes are growing, but the disposal income isn't. He thinks that'll put more money in people's pockets faster and give them the ability to spend faster. That's all that counts in this country. So everybody, buy, spend. Rising inflation, however, has taken a bigger toll. Disposable incomes were up 2.1% in September from a year earlier. That's the weakest advance since January 2014. The advances in purchases included a 1.8% jump in durable goods. Household purchases grew 2.1%, or about half of the pace as it was in previous three-month period. And all to me, that all slow down. But disposable incomes, Al. Americans will spend a record-breaking $8.4 billion on Halloween this year.
Well, at least we've got our priorities straight, Melody.
An estimated 171 million Americans, 69% of the country, plan to celebrate the holiday, dropping an average of about $83 on costumes, candy, assorted decorations, and party supplies. I can't imagine anyone spending $83 on where are they buying this stuff. Costumes, all of that for $83. You buy a bag of candy and it costs you $83.
Well, there's Halloween for kids, and there's Halloween for young adults, and there's Halloween for senior citizens. And the kids and the senior citizens don't need that much money. But the young adults, Halloween is cause for, I don't know, interesting celebrations. Sometimes it costs money.
Costumes account for $3.1 billion of the total. Half of the U.S. adults plan to wear costumes. And I'm sorry to say 17% will dress their pets up. No, I do not dress up Ruby. It's just like, oh, well. The top themes for adult costumes are superheroes of every persuasion, vampires, witches, pirates, political characters, and animals. There's probably a lot of Donald Trumps this year with his hair and everything. And speaking of animals, the most popular pet costume of all is a pumpkin.
Pumpkin? That's not pumpkin. An animal.
The costume.
Yeah.
Speaking of
costume, speaking of animals.
No, speaking of animals, the most popular pet costume is a pay attention now. Followed by a hot dog, Bumblebee, Lion, Devil, and Batman. The number of families planning to head outdoor to door for this tradition, that's up a little bit from last year. Still not as high as it was a couple of years back. About 29% of parents will head out around the neighborhood, and that is the second lowest number on record. You have community events that are popping up across the country, only because it's, you know, it's not safe for these kids anymore to go out there like it once was. About a third of Americans will either attend or throw a party. 46% will carve a pumpkin. 21% will visit a haunted house.
How many live in the haunted house? This is a haunted house. Is this a description of people living in a depression, an economic depression? They're now living haunted houses?
Perhaps. The Consumer Group report also found that 7 out of 10 Americans will hand out candy this year, and they'll spend $2.5 billion on it. The 10 ranked healthiest of the season of candy was Reese's Pumpkins, takes first place. That's the healthiest. The healthiest of the junk food that you can buy. Reese's Pumpkins takes first place. Then they list a bunch. The worst are Sweet Tart Chews, followed by Three Musketeers. So they either have no protein, too much fat, or too much sugar. So these are the least healthy of the, I mean, there's a list, but those are the top worst.
It's hard to imagine anything could have too much fat and too much sugar, Melody. I mean, Ben and Jerry's, they won't stand for that kind of slanderous talk. More fat, more sugar.
So there you have a little bit of reports. So Americans are out there spending, consumer spending's up, and everything is great, peachy keen. And
here's an article from Cheat Sheet, and it discusses, it parallels what you're talking about here to some degree. It says how much the average American has in their bank accounts. How much does the average American have in his bank account? A study by bank consulting firm Mobs Services in 2014 concludes the average number is about $4,436. This is an amount that accounts for averages in people's checking accounts specifically, and was notable a couple of years ago because it represented a significant jump from 2012's numbers. What's even more amazing is how much higher the figure is than it was in 2007, when the average American had only $788 in their checking account. So since 2007, we've gone from an average of roughly $800 in our checking accounts to $4,500 in our checking accounts. And I think the point is, well, people are managing their finances differently, and more people are actually saving. And I don't mean that this is a large number in a sense. This is an average number, 4,500 basically, as compared to 800 in 2007. Still, it's a big increase. It indicates a shift in spending mentality where people are sitting back and they're saying, I don't want to spend any more money. Let the rest of the world spend $83 on Thanksgiving. I will not participate. I'm saving my money just in case we have another Great Recession, or maybe something worse. But it's evidence that at least a percentage of the people are considerably more responsible about savings than they were prior to the beginning of the Great Recession. Another report from the Federal Reserve in 2013 says that 4,000 people that were surveyed, 31% reported having no retirement savings or pension, included 19% of those aged 55 to 64, and 25% don't know how they will pay their expenses in retirement. For a lot of people, this means one thing. They're one or two missed paychecks away from being in a lot of trouble, and that's the larger point. That a lot of people that are unemployed, a lot of people don't have any money in the bank account. Those that do have money in the bank account, meaning presumably they have disposable income that they could spend, they are more likely to be saving right now than they were in 2007. I'm not convinced that $4,500 in the checking account is necessarily cause for celebration, but it's better than $800 back in 2007. So, I don't know. We have reports of inflation. Some people see prices going up. Some people see money being spent on Halloween, and then we have other reports that indicate people are saving more so than they did prior to the onset of the Great Recession. Do you think that the amount of money that's being saved right now will be sufficient to cushion us and perhaps protect us in the event that we go into another Great Recession? Melody?
I'm sorry, I got it. No, I don't think it. Well, I already explained myself, Al. You weren't paying attention. And no, I don't think it's enough. I mean, you can read, you know, other reports saying that the savings is not there. The people aren't saving. And I don't think people are saving, can say, when you have health insurance costs and other things, their needs, not their wants, but their needs that are increasing to a point where people can't afford them, and they're just not going to stop paying them. So no, I don't see how they're actually saving the amount that they're saving.
It's average, and it averages out however much is being saved by Bill Clinton, all right, and Hillary Clinton. It's being averaged out with what's being saved by ordinary people who are perhaps only partially employed, which is zero. So it's an average, $4,500 It's better than it was in 2007, a lot better. But on the other hand, it doesn't impress me as being a lot.
No, it doesn't. If those, you know, so, I mean, yeah, you can always look at both sides. But, yeah, there's lots of reports that people aren't saving at all. There's a, you know, a lot of comment. Well, oil, gasoline prices have dropped, so people are saving there, and that is going into the, you know, that is going into the bank, and, you know, they're using that for savings and so forth. But we also see gasoline prices that are rising now. And again, healthcare costs. You know, 2 years ago, they didn't have healthcare costs. So I don't know how these people are really, when you have a family of four, when their healthcare is over $18,000, how in the heck can they save? I mean, to me, that's a huge amount. Yeah. That's a huge expense.
Of course
so
it is.
I mean, you know, again, I think a lot of these numbers that they throw out and so forth are to confuse, are to distract, and just to cover up, I think, the true state of affairs of this country. And I mean, certainly there's pockets of the economy that are doing well. There's people that are out there, they're working, and they're doing okay. But I'm not sure that is the, there's pockets, but I don't think that is the common, numbers. You know, I don't think it's everyone.
No, it's not everyone, that's for sure. I mean, it's as obvious as the income inequality that we see in the top 0.1% is getting filthy rich, as if they weren't to begin with, and the bottom 90% are, you know, struggling. It's just barely hanging on or whatever, although not all of the bottom 90% are poor, but just the same, you know, are they getting ahead? Are they just barely making the mortgage? Are they just barely making their car payment? The problem with all of this is if we don't have adequate savings, and we really do come upon, we enter into something like another great recession or worse, what's going to happen? How are people going to get by? I mean, this is really a great and profound question. The whole thing is so fragile right now that if things go badly, I can't imagine how they are going to be resolved or even tolerated or accommodated. I mean, will the government come in and provide food if the food supply system breaks down? How many people are going to go hungry to the point of starvation and perhaps even death? Now, I know how unlikely that sounds, but just the same, if the average person doesn't really have much money saved up, the rich do, of course they do, upper middle class does somewhat, but probably 70% of the American people don't have any savings worth mentioning. What happens if we really go into a serious situation? You know, we came close to some sort of an economic meltdown in 2008 when Lehman Brothers folded up. That was almost enough, not quite, but almost enough to put the U.S. economy and even the global economy into a depression. And nothing has really improved. We're not any more stable today than we were then. And although it might take two or even three major banking institutions, it might take two or three failures, bankruptcies to actually tip the whole thing into the abyss just the same. Right? That's a dangerous circumstance. I mean, two or three significant banking institutions going into bankruptcy doesn't strike me as a complete impossibility and something that's too fantastic to believe. So we're in danger, we're in jeopardy, and again, point behind that, the implication behind that is it's incumbent on all of us to do what we can to take care of ourselves, to prepare for the possibility. And so again, you know, we even use the analogy on a regular basis, but that ship is cruising across the ocean and headed into iceberg waters. Maybe we'll make it, maybe we won't, but it's not a bad idea to keep your lifeboat close at hand and your life vest close at hand, and who knows? Things may work out just fine, but maybe not, and if they don't, it's up to you to take care of yourself and your loved ones and your family and so on. Do what you have to do to be prepared. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment, going to take a break for a couple of commercials. And when we return, we'll talk a little about pensions from the 35,000 Teamster members in New York. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Many, many people have experienced the benefits of drinking all-natural Life Change tea. The unique blend of 8 herbs helps detoxify your body so you can live a healthier life. Numerous testimonies have been given about the benefits of drinking Life Change tea. So, are you drinking Life Change tea? Interested? Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Many are so impressed with our product, they order a year's supply. And why not? When they do, they receive 2 months free. That's a $70 savings. The body is meant to heal itself. Sometimes the body just needs a little help. Get the tea at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Or call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. This is not an ordinary green tea and is not available in stores. This tea helps with digestive problems, acid reflux, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and as talk show host Jerry Doyle says, it'll make you as regular as a baby bird. Enjoy your life. Get Life Change Tea at getthetea.com.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
The last day of the month. I'm going to have a great special tomorrow, so I shouldn't tell you. I shouldn't tell the listeners that, or they're just all going to wait until tomorrow to make any orders. So I guess I could close the door when we're done with the program and go home, right, Al? But we'll be here. No, we won't do that. But I'm going to have a great special tomorrow beginning November 1st through the holidays. So make sure you tune in tomorrow. Get your funds available and be ready to hear the special tomorrow. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And I received this email, and I'm going to paraphrase it, you know, throughout instead of read the whole thing. But he kind of stopped listening to the news only because, you know, there's just so many lies and everything. And, you know, he thinks that, you know, the stock market is going to go higher and higher. Gold's going to go lower and lower. And I don't see that happening. But the bulk, there's two things I wanted to make a note in here. The bulk of it is, you know, not to vote. He wanted me to tell the listeners not to vote for Hillary. He says this message is to warn the people what would happen if that evil female person were elected as president. He says there is a verse in the Bible that says, and the people will be ruled over by a woman. And I just know that this person is the whore who rides the beast. So please try to tell your listeners to not vote for this person. If this person is elected, you know, he's going to kind of disconnect from the rest of society and so forth. You know, we have a right to do what we want, and I think it's important, and he thought it was important that you guys don't vote for Hillary. And I have a little snippet. It's not new news, but one of my sources from one of Hillary's rallies, if that's what you want to call it, because there's so few people, said that they actually had she approached the stage from the back, so people couldn't see her from the front come up on the, go up the stairs on the stadium or on the platform of the stage. And when she went up the steps, they said it was very, she was like taking little granny steps. You know, it was like she could barely make it up the stairs.
And this happened just in the last day or two?
Happened in the last week.
She's done that before, and then she's really, I mean, at the speeches, she really looked strong. And I'm not a Hillary supporter.
No.
I can't imagine circumstances where I'd vote for her, but I have to admit, she looked strong. She looked capable, competent, that sort of thing. That's why
they said that she had a very difficult time going up the stairs, and that's how they had to arrange for her entrance to the back so the audience could not see her go up the steps, because she couldn't go up the, she had a very difficult time going up the steps. Now, I know there's a lot of reporting on her health and so forth, and, you know, I'm always in the frame of mind, yeah, she doesn't look good, yes, and this and that, but we don't have any proof, blah, 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 blah. I like proof. We can speculate all day long. We can speculate the reasons and so forth and get expert opinions and so forth, but we don't know the truth. This is the truth. I thought that was kind of interesting. So, and something else I wanted to come out with his email, that he wanted just to, you know, if she gets elected, just to forget about everything and not do anything anymore. Well, you know, we still have to live. We still have to fight. We still have to do what is necessary to prepare and to protect us or individually, our families. If you have grandbabies, if you have children and babies and grandbabies, so, you know, we have the right to do what we want. There's days I'll tell you, I'd like to say enough is enough. I'm tired of this. I'd just like to go and dig a hole and forget about it. But something someone always says always brings me back, and here we are to fight another day. And so that's what we have to do. And I do want to thank him for sending his email. It's another example of how frustrated so many people are, how frustrated and how disgusted, because we know and we see the evil that is out there. And, you know, we don't like living in it. And I understand how difficult it is. And so this, I thought this email was important. And we have to continue praying. We have to continue helping. And we have to continue preparing. And
I'm reminded of Matthew 24. I believe it's chapter 4. And I don't remember the verse, but it might be verse 13. But Matthew 24, I'm pretty sure that's correct chapter. It says, in part, those who stand firm to the end shall be saved. And it also says that at Matthew 10:22. And the point is, you're talking about, well, we have difficult times, and sometimes you'd like to just say, yeah, enough of this. But the truth is, I mean, if the Bible is true, it means
we're stewards. We have to be here. You're right.
You have to, those who stand firm mm-hmm. to the end shall be saved. And what that means is that you will be tested to the end. You're not going to be tested until you turn 55, and then they, okay, you can put in the next 20 years or however many you got, and without any testing, just sit back and rock in a rocking chair. If the Bible's true, it's not going to work out that way. You and I and everyone else will be tested to see if we will stand firm to the end, and will be tested until the end. That's the implication. So, I don't know, and it's one of the verses that resonates with me a great deal, the sort of thing where, well, you got to keep going, you know. It's not as if you're going to get a reward necessarily in this life that you're hoping for. It's not as if you're going to get the vacation you were hoping for. All right, we see this on television. Some people apparently live lives that are always at the pool or at the beach, if you can believe TV. And I don't, you know what he really believes that, but it looks like it. And we are tempted to say, boy, I'd like to live like that. But the truth of the matter is, there's a struggle to be faced, endured, and fought with. And You know, you have an obligation to do so, and not an obligation to me, not an obligation to the nation. You have an obligation to yourself and to the good Lord. Huh? Or at least that's the way it appears to me. What else do we have, Melody?
But I want to thank him for sending the email.
Let's do pensions.
Yeah, that's right. That's what you said we were going to do.
Yeah, but you know how I fib sometimes.
Yeah.
Remember,
yeah,
we got an article entitled 35,000 Teamster Members in New York Face Pension Cuts. This is from USA Today. 35,000 New York Teamster Union members may have to sacrifice a portion of their retirement income to bail out their pension fund. Current retirees will possibly see almost a third of their monthly payment wiped out next year. Those still working can count on their projected pension benefits to be trimmed by 20%. And they say if you're still working, your projected pension benefits will be trimmed by 20%. And I would add, for now. Okay? For now, they're going to trim it by 20%, but I'll bet it gets bigger than that before it's all over. The Teamster plan is barely 50% of the assets needed to cover projected benefits for covered employees as of 2015. To save the plan from possible insolvency, plan administrators are asking participants to make a sacrifice that they say will benefit all. Huh. Now, let me see if I get this straight, Melody. We're going to all benefit if we all agree to take less money. All right? And I have to suppose that there'd be some people say, wait, this doesn't strike me as such a benefit. Of course, what they're talking about is the plan will survive. And over a period of 5-10 years, however many, you'll get something as opposed to watching it fold up and get nothing. So they could say that's a benefit. But they talk about to save the plan from possible insolvency. There's nothing possible about it. This is probable. All right? It's almost certain that these pension plans are going to go. They're going to become insolvent. They're going to become bankrupt. They can dance around it for a while and try to avoid it and try to ignore it and hope that something's going to work out. But at least so long as the Federal Reserve continues to hold interest rates near zero, then there can't be then the profits available to pensions that have invested in U.S. Treasury bonds, for example, will not be sufficient to provide retirement for all the people that have contributed into those pension funds. The Fed's low interest rates are gutting the pension funds, and until the Fed raises interest rates significantly, I mean, these pension funds are devised on the idea that they're going to make 6-8% a year, and the interest rate is down there in the neighborhood of 2%. They're not going to do well, and they can't, until the Fed changes its policy on interest rates. And if it doesn't change it soon, a lot of these pension funds are simply going to expire. They'll go into insolvency and open bankruptcy. They say retirees over age 80 would be held safe from cuts, while those between 75 and 79 would see cuts on a sliding scale. Amand Gavazi, a UPS retiree from Vestal with 23 years of service, said, "I don't know what people are going to do." He expects to have his monthly income trimmed by $500 to $600 if the pension cutbacks are approved. Any pre-retirement planning done by Teamster members is now shot, with nearly one-third of their pension checks wiped out. Plan trustees say the plan was undermined by historic market losses. That's the first thing, 2008 and 2009. And two, a declining active union population. They have less union members. That's the other one. And three, an exodus of contributing employers. Well, the trustees for the plan, they're blaming it on the market losses. They're blaming it on the declining active union population, blaming it on a loss of employers. And I agree that these are certainly valid reasons that have impacted the pension funds. But the truth of the matter is, I'd say the plan was undermined by overly optimistic presumptions at the plan's beginning. I'd say that the plan was undermined by the plan's own failure to adequately allow for and protect predict that they might see historic market losses, that they might see declining union membership, that they might see a loss of contributing employers. For question, how many other modern pension plans are risking insolvency because they're based on overly optimistic premises? And the answer is most of them. What we're seeing here is another illustration of what I've talked about for years on this program: what can't be paid won't be paid. The money's not there. And it is not reasonable to sit back and say, well, get it from those idiot taxpayers. Because what we're really talking about when we get into these pensions and somebody wants to fund the pensions, the money's going to have to come from where? Probably the youth of this country. Young people in their 20s and 30s are going to have to contribute more money so the senior citizens can live in the style to which they've become accustomed. But if the young people have to do that, it means they won't be able to buy their own homes. They'll be less able to buy them. It won't be impossible, but they'll be less able to buy a home. They'll be less able to get married, less able to have a family, less able to have children, because they're paying off their grandparents' and their parents' pension promises. And there's something wrong about this, because these young people, they weren't there. Nobody consulted them, and if they did, they didn't know what was going on anyway when these pension agreements were made. And the unfortunate thing about them is these agreements were based on the idea that certain pension funds had enough political clout where they could get the government saying, sure, we'll tax the idiot taxpayers, and they'll pay for your pension plans, and you don't have to worry about your own pension plan. We'll just tax the idiot taxpayers. Well, taxpayers don't have it. Huh? And there's no reason, especially, why the younger people should be obligated to support the older people. The older people, the senior citizens, should have made proviso for their own retirement. And they should not have trusted their retirement to the government. And people said, oh yeah, we've got you covered. The unions, we've got you covered. Here's another one on pensions. This is a longer article. We'll probably not finish it before we get to the break. But generous pensions, will courts give government a way out? In a potentially huge win for advocates of cutting government pensions, a San Francisco-based appellate court in August declared that public retirement plans were not immutable and could be reduced. The three-judge panel said the law merely requires government to provide a reasonable pension. Now, this is not about Teamsters. This is about people who are working in government, and they've been guaranteed or they've been promised a certain amount of pension by their city or state government, particularly California in this case. And now it's turning out they're not going to get it. Again, this is evidence of we are facing fundamental problems. The courts can say, oh, sure, we'll make the taxpayers pay it. But they can't do that without hurting the economy, and they can't do it without hurting young taxpayers. All right? And somewhere along the line, somebody's got to pull in their horns and say, wait a second, I think the courts are doing the inevitable thing. I won't say it's necessarily right, but it is inevitable. They're saying the law merely requires government to provide a reasonable pension, not everything you've been promised in the past. And that's not an unreasonable conclusion. I mean, we're caught in an economic bind, and the money's not there. All right? If it's not there, you pay it. What can't be paid won't be paid. That unanimous ruling now before the California Supreme Court could be a vehicle for reducing a shortfall amounting to hundreds of billions of dollars in state and local pension systems. Standing in its way is the California rule, which guarantees workers the pension that was in place on the day they were hired. Until the last century, the law generally treated government pensions as gifts that could be taken away. People didn't live long, and pensions weren't considered to be particularly important. That changed as lifespan rose, we lived longer, and government employees sued to protect their retirement earnings, and California law now treats government pensions, they used to treat it as gifts, now they treat it as contracts to be protected by the state constitution. Well, you can see the bind we're in, but what it comes down to, again, what can't be paid won't be paid. And we're already seeing some of these people losing a third of their income, a third of their promised pension. I think it's going to be more than that before this is all done. I think you're going to be lucky to get two-thirds of most pensions paid over the course of the next 5 years. I think you might be lucky if you get 20% paid. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Won't you take me back to school?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Haddis. I'm here with Melody Seals from On Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, I saw an interesting article today. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it. Venezuela, they're having a, you know, their situation just gets worse and worse. And the article was about they're giving up on counting piles of cash, and what they are doing, they're weighing them. There's a delicatessen in Caracas, and he removes slices of salty white cheese from his scale and replaces them with a stack of Bolivar notes handed over by his customer. The currency is so devalued, and each purchase requires so many bills that instead of counting them, he just weighs them. He says at this point he thinks the cheese is worth more than the currency. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a and they show the scale at a bakery. I mean, you're looking at a pile of cash, probably a foot tall in three piles, because you know, the hyperinflation that is taking hold of the country, and that refuses to publish consumer price data on a regular basis. So cash weighing isn't seen everywhere, but it is increasing.
And it's all evidence of hyperinflation.
Hyperinflation.
Right. The people are losing confidence in their currency, and therefore, it doesn't just happen overnight. It's you walk in to buy a loaf of bread, and let's suppose that historically the price was 10 bolivars. Well, the guy at the grocery store, he will not accept 10 bolivars because he's losing confidence in the currency. He thinks it's losing value, and therefore, if you want to buy the bread, you're going to have to pay him 20 bolivars to overcome. He said, all right, I'll take 20 bolivars. I won't take 10. That's what we always took, but now I'm losing confidence in the currency. I'll have to have at least 20. Another day or two, that same guy is going to need to have 100 bolivars to pay for that same loaf of bread. As confidence wanes, prices go up. And the prices go up, it's hyperinflation. And that's what hyperinflation really is. It's evidence that public confidence in their currency is simply falling. And people are not just saying, I won't take any more bolivars. They haven't shut the light switch and just said, no, I won't take any more. But they're saying, I got to get more. I got to get so many that I can find some idiot down the street who'll give me a good deal on cheese or bread or whatever else it is, with however much I can squeeze out of whoever's buying cheese or bread or whatever from me.
And also, the government is refusing to publish figures. Mm-hmm. And you also have to remember that their currency at one time was one of the world's strongest currencies. And now it's just been reduced to nothing. Basic purchases require hundreds of bills. They're looking to their inflation. The last inflation that I heard of, the number was like 450-500%. Now there's estimates that will range from 200% to 1500%. The largest bill that they have is a 100 bolivar note. It's worth less than a dime.
Yeah.
And the government has asked 5 currency companies to submit bills for bigger bills. So you're going to have the same thing as you had in Zimbabwe. Eventually, they're going to print out a trillion dollar bolivar note.
Yeah. Eventually, they're going to get to that, but it will be interesting to see how Venezuela pays to have new notes printed up that are, say, a trillion bolivar notes. Who's going to pay? How are they going to pay for them? I remember watching a movie years ago, Pancho Villa, or a story of Pancho Villa, black and white from probably the 40s, maybe even the 30s, I don't recall. And he ordered a bunch of pesos for his government printed up, and I don't remember, let's say he ordered $100 million or 100 million pesos. And when the printers brought it to him, he told one of his helpers, and they wanted 50,000 to pay for it. He said, okay, take 50,000 off the pile and get out of here. And I said, no, we're not taking that stuff. We print it. We're not going to accept payment in it. And it made a really good point. Pancho Villa had to find real money to pay for the phony money that he'd purchased. We're seeing something like that happening in Venezuela. People are losing confidence. Where's it going to go? How's it going to work out? Doesn't happen overnight. I mean, that's an important point. It's not like people just throw a light switch, and today we accept $100 or 100 bolivar notes, and tomorrow we won't. But tomorrow we're going to want 150 bolivars instead of taking 100 bolivars today. And the day after that, we may want 250, and the day after that, we may want 1,000. And the prices rise and rise and rise as we lose confidence in the currency. Well, you can watch this happening in Venezuela, and you can watch for it to happen in this country. Our currency isn't any more sound than Venezuela's. We have certain advantages that Venezuela doesn't have. We don't have our government is not a complete leftist lunatic asylum. We're working on it. We're getting closer to it, you know. Put more lunatics in office, and they can do more crazy things with the currency. But we have that advantage. We have the advantage of still being the premier world reserve currency. Not the only world reserve currency, but the premier world reserve currency. We have that advantage. We can hold this thing together, in theory, for a few more years. But we aren't fundamentally any stronger than Venezuela, and in some regards, we may be weaker. I doubt that Venezuela's total debt is comparable, proportional, on a proportional basis to what is owed by this government right now. So, I don't know. We can watch the problems in Venezuela, and watch for the evidence where you may see it in your own lifetime, and maybe not so long from now.
And you know, part of this article talks about, and you know, we all talk about the lines, we vision the lines in the grocery store, no food and so forth and whatnot. While there are credit and debit cards in Venezuela, the government data shows that more than a third of the labor force is informal, though, meaning they mostly work for cash. So that includes your taxi drivers, your street hawkers, a lot of service jobs. And what about the state pensions to the elderly? They're generally paid in cash. So, you know, what do they, you know, if you have a, if your pension was normally $100, I mean, that's not, they're not going to give you $150.
No.
They're going to continue to give, they're going to continue to give you $100.
Yep.
Even though that piece of cheese that, you know, went up in a day to $150. So it destroys people.
It is by means of hyperinflation that the government can reduce its national debt. The government may owe you, say, 1,000 bolivars or 100,000 bolivars. Well, they're going to pay it to you. But by the time they do, the purchasing power of that 100,000 bolivars may only be in terms of 5,000 bolivars as compared to 5,000 bolivars at the time you loaned the 100,000. You're going to be the people that the government owes money to are going to be, they're going to lose their assets thanks to inflation and particularly hyperinflation. It's going to wipe out people's savings in their bank accounts. It's going to wipe out people's pensions.
And I think lots of times when we see the pictures of the grocery store shelves being empty and the fighting and food in the streets, you think it's just happening to poor people. You're just thinking that it's happening to a certain segment of the population, the people who work and have an income and so forth. They're not as affected, but they are. Even business people. You know, their prices, if one day they're charging 100 bolivar for a piece of cheese, the next day they have to charge 150, they're getting in all this cash that is worthless, but yet they have to store it. They don't know how they have
to. No, the only thing they can do with it is spend it right now. Because if they hold it for any length of time, it's going, they're losing money when they sit on it.
They're losing money.
So they've got to get out the door as soon as they get that 100,000 bolivars, they get out and spend it, because the next day it could be worth only 50,000. It'll still have 100,000, but it'll only purchase $50,000 or 50,000 bolivars worth of
and that's,
property.
And that's what this baker said. He says, we're at loss over what to do with these bags of bills.
Yeah.
He says, their business, this is a bakery, takes in hundreds of thousands of bolivars. And then he has to hide them.
So the thieves don't steal them.
You're going to see steal them, yeah.
Bank robbers running around with a gunny sack like Santa Claus over their shoulder. They have one of these enormous bags.
Yeah.
All right? And what's it worth? I don't know. It might be enough to buy lunch.
So these are stories you don't normally hear or associate when we talk about hyperinflation of other countries. And I you know, thought it was interesting.
Well, we're bound to see it. It's a function of confidence. It's not a function of mathematics per se. Hyperinflation is a function of declining confidence in the currency. And what I would have taken 100 bolivars for yesterday, today, because I don't trust the currency the way we have in the past, I need 150. And tomorrow I need 250, and the day after that I need 1,000. It's an exercise in confidence. It's not mathematics in the sense of some mathematical formula that you can find in an economics text that'll tell you what has to be done. How, you know, if you have A, B, and C, these factors, then you will see hyperinflation to this particular rate. That's not what this is. This is about public confidence. And that's important because you can't restore, once public confidence is lost, you can't restore it by coming up with some new promises and statements and one thing and another. And you can't rah, 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 everything's going to be fine, go out and buy, tell the people go buy something. Once that confidence is lost, it will not be easily rebuilt. And there's no telling how far it can go before finally they just have to say, this system is, we've had enough, we can't go any further, we've got to shut it down and do something else. We talked last week, Zimbabwe is getting ready to try it again. After all the trouble they had 10 years ago with the Zimbabwean hyperinflation, the Robert Mugabe is prepared to take another stab at printing more of the Zimbabwean dollars, which is I think it was Simon Black who did the article on it, and he said, what could go wrong? You know? And of course it's going to go wrong. Of course it's going to go wrong. And the only question for us here in the United States is, when is it also going to go wrong for us? You know, we talked in the past about something like 275 different instances in world history where governments have tried to work with a fiat currency. And every one of them has failed, with the exception of four or five of them that are still working right now, and that's because they're recent. That includes the U.S. dollar, fiat, pure fiat currency since 1971. All 270 of them have just gone belly up. The only question is, when does our currency go belly up? And no one can answer that question, but it does not look like we're talking about an event, you know, 20 years into the future.
And I'll tell you what,
something that could happen at any time and is almost certain to happen within, I don't know, 3 years, five tops, and could happen
and this
last quarter of this year.
And this election, with what was, depends on what is going to be thrown at Hillary and how this election turns out, the confidence, not just here in the States, the United States, the biggest Federal Reserve, the biggest economy. I mean, to me, it is truly a sign of disintegration. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is how countries begin to collapse.
Yep.
And so we are there, folks.
We're close.
We're there. You just don't know it yet. And yes, the market's not going to drop 8,000 points tomorrow. You know, gold's not going to 8,000 tomorrow either. But I do believe, I don't know how many signs people have to have. And yet I read every day and I talk every day to people that don't get it. And can't imagine. And they're still supporting the Clintons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a right-wing conspiracy. Well, you know, Comey, I can't figure that guy out. You know, he had to get a lot of pressure on both sides. Number one, to call off the back in July, not to go forward on it. We don't have time to discuss this, but also something to reinitiate. And at this time, so there's big forces going on,
I
folks.
Understand.
Big
there
forces.
There are tectonic shifts
taking
place behind the scenes, but we can see by inference, we can see all the shaking. Alright? And we may not understand what's making the tectonic plates move, and we may not know exactly which direction they're going in, but some extraordinarily powerful forces have been unleashed, and James Comey's decision in the last 2 weeks before the election, his decision to reopen the investigation of Hillary's email, it's evidence that just incredible pressures are being brought to bear. Where it's going to wind up, you know, God only knows. But we'll watch, and if you're sensible, you'll get prepared as best you can. Part of the way is get some gold, get some silver. We're out of time. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams